Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Sherritt International Corporation First Quarter 2015 Result Release Conference Call and Webcast. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star, followed by the zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Wednesday, April 29th, 2015, at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I will now turn the presentation over to Sean McCaughan, Vice President of Investor Relations and Communications. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Sherritt International Corporation First Quarter 2015 Results Conference Call. Our results were released yesterday evening after the close of the markets, and a copy of the press release along with the MD&A and full financial statements are available on our website at www.sherritt.com. Also available on the website is an accompanying presentation on the quarterly results that we will be referred to during the call. Today's conference call is being webcast, so in addition to those on the line, anyone may listen to the call by accessing our website homepage and clicking on the webcast link. A replay of the webcast will be available on the website later today. Before we begin our comments, I'd like to remind everyone that today's press release and certain of our comments on the call will include forward-looking statements. We'd like to refer everyone to the cautionary language included in our press release and to the risk factors described in our SEDAR filings. On the call is David Pathe, our President and Chief Executive Officer, and Dean Chambers, our Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. We'll begin with a review of the results for the quarter and then move into a Q&A session to address any questions you might have. And with that, I'll now turn the call over to David.
All right. Well, thank you, Sean, and good morning, everyone. Just before we get into this, I just wanted to note that Steve Wood, our new Chief Operating Officer, has joined us here at Sherritt this week. Steve is known to some of you. He comes to us from ArcelorMittal Canada's iron ore mining operations, where he was president and CEO. Before ArcelorMittal, Steve had a long career in the nickel business, including a period of time in Indonesia. I just wanted to welcome Steve, wish him luck, and say that I'm delighted that we were able to attract a person of Steve's caliber. So turning to the quarter, I'm going to frame my discussion around the strategic priorities that you've heard us talk about over the past year, which are still our guiding principles for the year ahead. Those of you following along in the presentation, you'll see those on slide four. I'll be talking about the progress at Mbatovi, and specifically our achievement of the 90-for-90 hurdle that we've been talking about, what remains to be done for the independent engineer sign-off, as well as timing and action required for the remaining. Secondly, looking at our Cuban energy business and recognizing that a number of you attended our Investor Day presentation in late March, we've got some initial results now from our drilling in the Puerto Escondido-Yumuri extension, and I'll spend a little time on those results. Our balance sheet and liquidity remain top of mind, and this quarter shows some good progress in reducing administrative costs. We had combined administrative expenses coming in at $17.7 million. So starting with the highlights on slide five, the highlight of the quarter from my perspective was the strong production and low costs at both of our nickel operations. Higher production, both at Mbatovi and at Moa, resulted in our metals unit delivering the highest nickel production level in our history, and cash costs at $4.36 per pound at Moa and $5.76 at Mbatovi. We also met the criteria for the production performance milestone, with Mbatovi running at 54,000 tons annualized, which is 90% of nameplate capacity, for 90 days and 100-day continuous period. We were aiming to achieve this milestone by mid-year, and there were those of you that thought that was ambitious. However, we got there ahead of schedule, thanks really to the problem-solving acumen of the Sherritt Technologies people and the persistence, dedication, and hard work of our team at Mbatovi. Financially, our adjusted EBITDA of $44.2 million was down 19% year-over-year. EBITDA and metals and power were both up, but those gains were more than offset by oil, with realized oil prices down over 40%. On a cash flow basis, our combined adjusted operating cash flow increased this quarter to just over $56 million. So turning to our nickel operations, starting with the Moa joint venture on slide six. Moa is off to a good start for the year this quarter, with the quarter similar to Q4 last year. Production increased to over 8,700 tons of finished nickel and about 850 tons of cobalt on a 100% basis. We also saw our overall cost profile improve as net direct cash costs for a pound of nickel decreased 18% year over year to $4.36 a pound, aided mainly by lower fuel, oil, and energy costs as well as the higher production. Mining and processing unit costs also came down, despite higher sulfur and sulfuric acid costs, as we realized some improvements in our fixed costs and recognized the benefit of some reduced unplanned maintenance. On slide 8, you'll see the main activity at MOA, slide 7, sorry, the main activity at MOA right now is to highlight the start of construction on our new acid plant. It'll be the third acid plant on the site and will eliminate our dependence on imported sulfuric acid. Starting the construction is good, but we still have some work to do with our Cuban contractor to ensure there's no slippage in the schedule, and we're working with them on that now. The economic benefits of the third acid plant come from both the benefit of consuming sulfur rather than sulfuric acid and from reducing fuel oil consumption as a result of being able to capture and use steam from the steam produced during the acid-making process. Lower fuel oil prices have already delivered some of the benefit of reduction in our net direct cash costs. In today's environment, the savings remain meaningful to us and would have been just over 15% if the acid plant was up and running now. With sulfuric acid costs directly or indirectly representing about a third of our operating costs, the acid plant project offers a very attractive payback and an ability to reduce our operating costs further. Moving on to Mbatovi on slide 8, you've heard us talk about the ramp up at Mbatovi for the last 10 quarters or so now, and we've evolved through responding to mechanical failures to optimizing process and controls. The 90 for 90 milestone was a tremendous accomplishment, and we've all been waiting for a cash figure that starts with a 5. Our strategy in the second half of last year to proactively deal with the maintenance turnarounds on the autoclaves was successful. We've continued to see costs come down with increased production. Production in this quarter was over 11,500 tons of finished nickel, up 33%. To zero in on this trend, we've got a graphic showing the correlation of the last 5 quarters between increased production and lower cash costs. While it can be misleading to look at cash costs over shorter periods due to the timing and cost impact of maintenance activities, in January, when we ran at over 90% of capacity, we saw net direct cash costs in Mbatovi that were in line with our MOA operation. Adjusted EBITDA improved from the fourth quarter, and operating cash flow of $12.6 million represents approximately 30% of our metal segment cash flow this quarter, with further gains to come as we reach design capacity. In April, we've seen some production impact, so the plant did run during the recent strike action. We proactively undertook some maintenance at the refinery as a result of the mine strike, and that ran into early April. We also undertook some of the maintenance turnaround in our fifth autoclave that we postponed during the fourth quarter while we were on our 90 for 90 run. As we usually do, we'll release April production numbers early next month. While I'm here, let me make a brief comment on the strike action at Mbatovi in April. Last week, we announced that the brief plant strike by some of our employees had been resolved. Strike at plant was relatively short-lived and involved only a portion of our workforce, so we were able to keep the plant running during the strike. This was our second strike in 2 months following a similarly brief action at the mine site in March. In both cases, the grievances were non-compensation related, really having more to do with communications issues. In each case, we were able to come to an agreement on the path forward to improve communications and get people back to work. On the next slide, it'll be familiar to those of you that attended our Investor Day presentation in March. The independent engineer recently visited the site and is now reviewing all the documentation pursuant to final sign-off expected sometime in May for several certificates. All 3 of the certificates for production, efficiency, and environmental are up for approval around the same time. The remaining 2 certificates, being legal and financial, don't require any independent engineer sign-off, and we continue to believe we're on track for the September 30th deadline. My last comment on metals is just to touch on nickel markets and what we're seeing. Expectations this year were for higher nickel prices supported by a supply shock, but we've seen the nickel market continue to demonstrate volatility and weakness in pricing, with prices down a further 9% since the fourth quarter. That being said, market expectations continue to forecast a deficit forming in the market, and we agree the market still has the potential to shift to deficit later this year. Inventories in the LME did increase during the quarter, but there are signs that we are at least seeing those level off now at current levels. Looking into supply, inventories of lateritic ore in China continue to decrease, which will lead to NPI reductions in China. The consumption side, the market continues to watch for changes in Chinese growth and stainless steel demand. While there are some signs of slowing steel demand have been reported out of China, most experts are still forecasting a global increase in demand this year. Longer term, which is really where we focus, we continue to expect to see supply deficits and supporting expectations of rising nickel prices later this year. The reality is we're in the nickel business for the long term. Our view of the fundamentals that the coming supply shortage will support a strengthening price and lead to improved results for us. On to our oil and gas business. You'll have seen from our results, the real story in the quarter is heavily influenced by the drop in oil prices over year over year. We're now seeing some recent strength in Brent and WTI that may have a little more positive and decisive movement we've last seen in the last few months, but we continue to watch that. Results in the first quarter were the same theme we saw last quarter. The impact to our netbacks from the realized sales prices is visible, and costs were up due to weaker Canadian dollar, higher maintenance, and higher well workover costs. Overall, operating costs of $8.26 in Cuba, though, are still very attractive by industry standards. Capital spending of $27 million was based on a drilling plan for the year, which primarily includes new wells in the extension area. Turning now to slide 13, we can take a look at what we're seeing so far in our drilling program. So we're the largest independent oil producer in Cuba, producing roughly 20,000 gross working interest barrels of oil per day from 58 wells. The majority of these wells are part of our existing Veradero West production sharing contract and our Puerto Escondido Yamuri PSC, and those end in November 2017 and March 2018, respectively. Our multi-year strategy there includes an increased drilling this year in the extension area, with plans to move into new areas, such as Block 10, which we believe holds significant potential for our company. Block 10 is particularly attractive, given the discovery there in the 90s, which tested at 3,000 barrels a day. Block 10, we're starting with the exploration work, which includes reprocessing of existing seismic information, and we'll be looking to drill there early next year. If all goes according to plan, expected production from these new areas becomes meaningful in the 2017-2018 timeframe. So let me review our production results for the quarter and production from the wells drilled and completed since the quarter end. Our gross working interest oil production for the quarter was off 2% compared to a year ago. This quarter, we've seen decline rates perform a little better than expected on existing wells. And of our 58 wells, 5 are new wells now producing in the extension areas. Of those wells, I think 3 are performing at expectations. 2 wells are a little below our expectations, and we have a 6th that has now just finished drilling and is currently being tested. In our recent drilling in the extension area, we've had more success on the Puerto Escondido side thus far than on the Yamuri side. Based on what we're seeing in Yamuri, we're slowing down our drilling while we get a little better handle on the geology. Accordingly, you'll see what we've reduced both our capital and production guidance slightly for 2015. When I look at our net production, I see we're down 7% year over year. Typically, in an environment like this, we have declining oil prices and higher costs. We would see higher net production. However, that factor is temporarily altered. This trend is the new extension work and our new contract at Puerto Escondido Yamuri. Like all of our PSCs in Cuba, we have a quarterly limit on how much we can recover in cost recovery oil in any given quarter. This puts a ceiling on our cost recovery barrels and net barrels, and timing is the only difference here. These barrels costs will be recovered in future periods as per our agreements and our plans. Turning now to power on slide 15, we saw production levels higher than the prior period, primarily due to the prior year not really having a full quarter of production. That being said, production and power remains consistent, and this business continues to generate strong results after the addition of the Boca Phase 8 project. Financially, adjusted EBITDA improved to $7.3 million. In addition, we're also receiving principal and interest on the loan we have down to the Energas joint venture. Timing was such that we received an interest payment this quarter, which led to cash flows higher to approximately $24 million for the quarter. Now, that's what I wanted to touch on. I'll turn it over to Dee now, who will take you through some financial and accounting highlights, and then we'll come back and take your questions.
Thank you, David, and good morning. I would like to cover our financial performance during the quarter, our focus on balance sheet and liquidity, an update on the improving tax rates in Cuba, and developments in our continuous improvement program to enhance our public disclosure. Let me begin with that last item. You will recall last quarter we introduced the non-GAAP metric combined revenue to assist readers in getting a better sense of our revenue across all of our divisions. My first slide, slide 16, recaps the different metrics we present on a combined basis, which are designed to provide an overall view of our business instead of what IFRS dictates in our financial statements. You will find a summary and a reconciliation of our combined measures on page 5 and 6 of our MD&A. This quarter, we are implementing enhanced cash flow disclosure. This is centered around a couple new non-GAAP items, namely combined adjusted operating cash flow, combined adjusted operating cash flow per share, and combined free cash flow. Our combined adjusted operating cash flow is combined because it takes the operating cash provided by continuing operations from our cash flow statement and also includes the cash flow from operations on a proportionate basis for MOA, for the MOA and Mbatabi joint ventures. In comparison, our consolidated statements of cash flow in our financial statements only show cash flow from Mbatabi or MOA when there is a distribution, for example, a dividend. As previously reported, the adjusted term is just showing that this metric is before changes in non-cash working capital. This metric can be divided by the average number of shares outstanding to determine the combined adjusted operating cash flow per share. Now, the combined free cash flow metric starts with combined cash provided by operations and adjusts for capital expenditures only. These definitions are included in the appendix to the slides, and a detailed summary of all our non-GAAP measures can be found on pages 24 to 29 of the MD&A, where we also break out these new metrics by segment. So with that overview behind us, let's move on to the quarter. Slide 17 shows our financial highlights. Now, just a reminder, when making comparisons year over year in our financials, we are comparing a full quarter at Mbatabi in Q1 of this year to 2 months of the quarter last year, as we reached commercial production in January of 2014 and began reporting operating results as of February 1st. This quarter, we reported adjusted EBITDA of $44 million compared to 2014 adjusted EBITDA of about $55 million. This decrease was mainly due to lower EBITDA from oil. Looking at earnings, we reported a net loss from continuing operations of approximately $57 million compared to a net loss of $148 million in the fourth quarter and a loss of $48 million in the year-ago quarter when oil prices were considerably higher. In a couple of minutes, I will walk through the drivers of earnings and cash flow for the quarter. Before I do that, I want to also touch on our liquidity, our debt, and required funding for Mbatabi. We exited Q1 with continued strong cash on hand of approximately $478 million and total available liquidity of almost $550 million. Our debt profile was relatively steady during the quarter, as our debt grew only as a result of accrued interest and foreign exchange. We did not see any meaningful changes in this quarter in our liquidity position, despite lower commodity prices. Now, year to date, it has not been required for Sherritt to fund Mbatabi. However, we continue to forecast funding by the Mbatabi partners in 2015, as funding is primarily driven by debt service on the project's senior debt, with principal payments scheduled for June and December. We had previously disclosed an expected funding requirement of $50 to $100 million for Sherritt's share for this year. But we are currently evaluating the impact of further weakness in the nickel price, and on a preliminary basis, we could see the funding requirement certainly increase to the higher end of that range, or potentially a little higher. On slide 18, we recap the changes we announced in March to the Cuban statutory tax rates following the new foreign investment law. These changes resulted in a recorded income tax recovery of $30 million, split between a non-cash adjustment of $13 million, reflecting remeasurement of deferred tax liabilities, and a current tax recovery of $17 million. These reductions are significant, with statutory rates falling from 30% to 22.5% in oil and gas, from 45% to 22.5% at MOA, and from 30% to 15% in power. And just to give you a frame of reference going forward, we would expect approximately $17 million in cash tax savings at these rates, with similar earnings to what we experienced in 2014. When higher nickel and oil prices return, we would expect higher savings as pre-tax earnings also would increase. Lastly, we are still waiting confirmation of the new statutory tax rate at power, but the others have been confirmed. I also want to run through our change in earnings from last quarter to this quarter. Looking at slide 19, you see we're starting with a Q4 of 2014 adjusted net loss of $80 million. We then look at the changes in major items that contributed to the net loss of $56.8 million this quarter. We then present the adjusting items that get us to an adjusted net loss of $71 million. So operationally, the largest improvement is the increased earnings from Mbatovi between the periods. Oil and MOA earnings both declined due to lower oil and nickel prices. Next, we show the tax recovery during the quarter, which I covered in the previous slide. We also saw a higher FX loss in the quarter, resulting from a weaker Canadian dollar and higher consolidated depreciation. There are a few items netted against the FX loss and higher depreciation, which takes our reported net loss for the quarter to $56.8 million. And when taking into account a few adjusting items shown on this slide, the adjusted net earnings figure is $71 million. Similarly, if I review our changes in cash flow from the fourth quarter to this quarter, shown on slide 20, we see some similar trends driving improvements. Overall, combined adjusted operating cash flow changed from negative $35 million in the fourth quarter to $56 million in the first quarter. Mbatovi's cash flow improved by $24 million during the quarter. However, MOA and oil both showed small decreases in cash flow. Cash flow from the power business was up substantially, primarily with the timing of interest received on the conditional sales agreement loan. Debenture interest was lower due to the timing of interest payments, and we also didn't have the one-time premium and fees of $34 million paid in the debt restructuring that occurred in the fourth quarter of last year. Slide 21 shows our capital spending guidance. Naturally, in this lower price commodity environment, we are constantly evaluating appropriate adjustments to our capital plans to manage the balance sheet and our liquidity levels. We are making some changes to our capital guidance today. Now, the majority of our capital spending is actually denominated in U.S. dollars. As a result, the $231 million of capital originally forecasted is approximately $250 million at today's exchange rate. We have now implemented a reduction from this current capital number that gets us to $210 million in capital spending for this year. So when factoring in the change in FX rates I just mentioned on our capital plans, this reduction is more representative of an approximately $40 million reduction in capital, as opposed to the $21 million you see by just comparing today's guidance to previous guidance. Now, most of the reduction falls in oil and gas, recognizing the drilling results so far, and the intention to drill fewer wells. The reduction in the MOA JV is relatively minor, given the need to replace mobile equipment, progress the acid plant, and a requirement for sustaining capital at the refinery, which is on schedule to complete a 1-in-10-year turnaround this summer. I would also like to note that with the planned extended shutdown this summer, we forecast that the shutdown will have an approximate impact of 500 tons on our normal second quarter production. Reductions at Mbatovi relate to a number of individual sustaining projects which can be deferred without negatively affecting achieving financial completion. Now, in the event that commodity prices do improve, there could be a reassessment of capital expenditures going forward. Lastly, on our last call, I indicated that we would recognize a gain of approximately $19 million on the sale of our corporate office here in Toronto. And I indicated we would recognize that in this quarter. However, due to the timing of that transaction, now expect to report that gain in the second quarter. This wraps up my remarks, and I will now turn the call back to David.
All right. Well, thanks, Dean. So in summary, I'd say the quarter is a good start to the year operationally against the backdrop of persistently weak commodity prices for a lot of commodities, including ours. Over the last year, we've taken steps to bring greater focus to our company and reduce our debt levels, improve operational performance, extend the life of our energy business, and reduce costs. But as a shareholder, like many of you, I also care about the share price. Commodity prices continue to be difficult for us, but my personal economic future is inextricably tied to this company. Success at Embattavi is a company maker. However, we're also committed to improving and building value in all of our businesses. We are an operator of large, competitive, low-cost assets, and we continue to look at how we can be better, more competitive, and enhance value in this changing business environment. With that, we'll turn it back over to the operator and take your questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions at this time, you may press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. If you're using a speakerphone today, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions, you may press star one at this time. One moment, please, for our first question. Your first question on the line today will come from Anup Prihar with GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just two quick questions on Embattavi. First, I know, David, you spoke a little bit about the strike at the refinery, but could you just provide a bit more context there? And then the second question is, I noticed that there's about a $2 a pound differential between your realized cobalt prices at Embattavi versus Moa. And when you look at the realized price in nickel, they're almost identical. I'm just wondering, how do we explain that delta?
Sure, Anup, how are you? On the strike, the strike itself at the plant site, I think, went on for 8 or 9 days. It was less impactful on us than the mine strike the previous month, because the mine strike did more or less stop production at the mine, and we were just able to send some down the pipeline off of stockpiles. But the plant, we were able to largely keep running. It was only a portion of our workforce that went off the job, and the workforce of the of various contractors there that run some of our utilities and other elements were unaffected. So as the strike went on for a week or so, a little over a week, the production impacts were somewhat in that we just didn't get the maintenance activities as quickly as we would if we were fully staffed up, but it didn't slow things down the way the mine strike did the previous month. And in Madagascar, generally, I think there'll always be events that we're dealing with. I think we've got a strong team of people down there that handled it well and had good communication with the workforce. We did see the government get involved at very senior levels, and the Prime Minister dispatched a couple ministers down to Toa Messina to help facilitate the discussions between us and the Work Council and push towards a settlement. So It was definitely seen as a big issue in country that everybody was keen on getting to a resolution, and I'm pretty confident today that we did, and we'll people are back to work, and we'll continue to work on that relationship. Cobalt price, I'm not sure what the answer is for you there, and we'll get a better answer to you. We are seeing good quality metal now on both the nickel and cobalt coming out of Embattavi. This year, virtually all the nickel we produce has been LME grade nickel out of Embattavi. Now we've solved our previous issues there. Beyond issues of timing of shipments and finding new and ongoing steady customers for cobalt pricing, for the longer term arrangements for cobalt customers out of Madagascar. I don't have an immediate answer for that, but we'll get you one. Over time, I would expect that we would see that spread converge, and we should see very similar pricing subject to shipping and timing and those sorts of concerns out of both plants.
Your next question on the line will come from Greg Barnes with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
But Dave, can you talk a little bit about the challenges, I guess, you've had at the two wells in Cuba and why the Yamuri isn't, I guess, meeting up to expectations?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what we're going to spend the next 3 or 6 months figuring out, Greg. They just haven't come on producing at the rates that we were anticipating. A couple of them are producing. We've got one that's still producing more water than we were anticipating and less oil than expected. And so they're not as rich as we were, as the seismic and geology was indicating they might be. And so our oil guys have got some work to do just to figure out why that is, and they're going back and looking at their models and the geology again. Just given the capital environment and what the results that we've seen so far there, that's why we're going to take our time on this a bit and see if we can't understand a little better what's going on there before we pick our next drilling location in Yamuri, and then that's what we'll do. But I don't have a lot of insight into it beyond that for you today, beyond that they didn't come online quite the way our models suggested they would and should, and we're going back and I got some homework to do to try and piece together why that is.
So just so I'm clear, the Yamuri, this is not one of the new blocks, though. This is one of the previous blocks that you had.
No, the drilling, all the drilling we've done so far this year is in that existing block, the Puerto Escondido Yamuri block, which is the one we signed the extension on mid-year last year. And so all the wells we drill subsequent to that date we have for an additional 10 years. On the new blocks, we're still reprocessing the seismic and identifying drilling locations, and we'll hopefully be drilling early next year.
Okay. And just the block 8A, I guess that's 4 on the map here, that's on land, I think.
Yes.
And that's different from what you've been doing in the past, is it not?
It is. Our recent activity there has been more in the immediately offshore blocks, and you can see on that map, I don't have it in front of me here, but you can see where Puerto Escondido and Yamuri and Paradero West and where the new block 10 is. Are all sort of immediately offshore, and that's where we've historically done the offset. So we've got some feel for Block 8A, but not as much information as we have on Block 10. Our focus between now and 2016 will be on Block 10. We were on that that drilling result that I mentioned from the 90s was us. But at the time, it was quite a long reach from onshore, but the advances in the technology of the last 20 years make that more accessible now than it was when that first well was drilled. So you're right, 4 is a different in terms of it no longer being offshore horizontal drilling out underneath the seabed the way our existing production is. It's still in the same general geographic area, and we think similar geology. But that's why our primary and our initial focus is on Block 10.
Okay. When do you think you'd be drilling 8A, or is that way off in the future?
That's not specifically planned. That's at least 2 or 3 years in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any additional questions at this time, you may press the star followed by the number 1 on your touchtone phone. If you're using a speakerphone today, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions, you may press star 1 at this time. We seem to have no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back over to management for any closing comments.
Thank you, operator. Before we close for the quarter, I'd like to take this time to remind everyone of our upcoming annual general meeting on May 12th. Details of this event can be found under the events section on our website at www.sherritt.com. We also look forward to speaking with you again in July with the release of our second quarter 2015 results. Thank you to everyone for participating in the call, and please feel free to contact us with any follow-up questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference call for today. We thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect your lines and have a great day.